Hi, this is Jay Washburn.
And I'm Joe Bendusky.
And you're listening to Start Writing.
And today we are having our discussion on exposition and info dumps. So as we mentioned, we'll be citing a lot of examples from The Expanse and a few other pieces of work. As we did the research on this one, it definitely expanded beyond the scope of a single episode. So we'll be doing it this month and next month. So if you didn't have a chance to pick up The Expanse, you can hit up our website and link over to Amazon to pick up either the audio or just the ebook if you want to kind of check out those examples. So, like, as I've mentioned before, we do try to do TV and movies for our examples as much as possible, but because we're dealing with exposition, we really do have to use a text version. So we've tried to limit it to the first five chapters of the book, without going beyond that. So you don't have to dig in really deep to cover all the examples we're going to talk about. All right, so let's start with an explanation of exposition, because I came across an explanation that I thought was really good, and that is exposition is a literary device used to introduce background information about events, settings, characters, or other elements of a work to the audience or readers. The word comes from the Latin language, and its literal meaning is to show forth. Exposition is crucial to any story, for without it, nothing makes sense, right? And I think I like that part because it's telling you that you need it, because there's a lot of writing advice that tells you, get rid of it. Get rid of your exposition, get rid of the info dumps, get rid of all that back character stuff. And I tried to follow that in the first couple of books I wrote, but in the Skyfall Conspiracy, which was two books ago that I wrote, I tried to include a lot more of the backstory for one of the characters, and that's one of the things people love about the book the most, is really getting to know this one character. It is in contradiction to that piece of advice. So my advice is not to cut all your backstory and not to cut all your exposition, because it's, as it says, exposition is crucial to any story. But it has to be done in the right way for it to work, for it not to be boring and dull and slow it down. And so that's mostly what we're talking about, is not getting rid of your exposition, but looking at a variety of different ways to introduce it to make it work well within the story. Because when it is done well, it adds a lot to a story. Another explanation of exposition comes from Robert McKee, and that is exposition means facts, the information about setting, biography, and characterization that the audience needs to know to follow and comprehend the events of the story. So those are the two things. So the first thing we're going to talk about is narrative drive. So this is not about exposition itself, but rather we're going to be talking about memory slots, like how many spots of memory you can have and how you're going to want to clear those before you go into any kind of big exposition. And this is why you don't want a cliffhanger before your exposition. And we're going to go deeper into that when we talk about how memory works. But narrative drive is about creating a drive within the story that's not really a cliffhanger, more of a big question. So the easiest way to explain narrative drive is it's kind of the big question of the story. And the reader is curious and wants the answer to that, but they know they're not going to get that on the next page. They're not going to get that in the next chapter. So, and one of the ways that I kind of came to understand narrative drive is if we look at the two best-selling genres of books, both of them are based on narrative drive so that you really can't screw it up. The first is romance. What is the narrative drive? Who and how will get together, right? That's the narrative drive. It's the foundation of the entire genre. So if you're writing in it, you already know what your narrative drive is, right? And the second biggest seller of books, mysteries. And again, the narrative drive is built into the genre. There's a dead body, and we got to figure out who the killer is. Second most popular book. So these two have their narrative drive built into them. And I think that's part of the reason other genres sometimes don't sell as well. Because what is the narrative drive of your sci-fi? Well, the author's got to figure that out. Right? The same thing. You're writing a fantasy or supernatural. Any time you walk away from those two genres, the author has to figure out that narrative drive, and that's a ball they can drop sometimes.
Wait, now reconnect this to exposition.
So this is not about exposition. This is about if you have a strong narrative drive, then you don't need a cliffhanger to pull the reader to the next chapter, the narrative drive pulls them through the book. And so you can clear those memory slots by having a chapter that ends in a kind of resolution, which enables you to do exposition more effectively in the next chapter.
Mm.
Okay, so we're going to... So
you're saying narrative drive sets you up for doing exposition better.
Yes. Okay. You had mentioned when we were introducing this idea that you had this big cliffhanger, and then you're like, now I can buy myself some setting and some exposition, mm-hmm. and the readers didn't like it.
Yeah, it didn't work.
So this is going to come down to memory slots. So essentially, the human memory can only track so much information at one time. And the more pieces it has to track, the harder it is to consume new information. So a cliffhanger essentially fills in most of those memory slots. They've got to remember the elements that are the cliffhanger. When you try to go into a lot of setting or exposition or anything that's not answering that cliffhanger, one, it's harder for them to consume that information. Remember, understand, comprehend. And two, they have an urge to skim because they're retaining these items in their memory and they want to get to the pieces that connect back to it as fast as possible. Let's go into the memory. So memory holds between 4 and 5. I mean, sometimes if you're really focusing, you can get as high as 7 items in it. But again, when people read, they're relaxing, right? So you're looking at 4 or 5 items that can be stored in memory at any given time. So I'm going to give you a string of letters, and your job is to try and remember the string of letters, right? So this was a great example on Story Origin. And so it's MDPHDRSVPCEOIHOP. So it's a really long string of numbers, and if you're going to remember all of it, you're going to be working really hard. So there's a trick we do all the time to help recall easier, and that's chunking, right? Like if you think of how you remember a phone number,
that's so
right?
Funny. I caught the last 2. I didn't catch the first 3.
Yeah. So the chunking lets us put small pieces of information into bigger groups. And so it's still only 4 to 5 items to remember, but because they're grouped together, they're easier. So you have MD, like a doctor, or PhD, like a doctor, RSVP, CEO, and then IHOP, right? So we've taken that string of letters and condensed it into several chunks. And it's a lot easier to remember.
Yeah.
Now,
just like that,
you know, because it's there. But again, you that would take some effort to remember. And so what we want to do is convert things to as much narrative form as possible to essentially reduce that, because if we can get it down to one fluid sentence, it functions as one chunk, right? Instead of, you know, as many as we had in the beginning or the 5 smaller pieces.
Yeah.
So we could break it down to the MD and the PhD, RSVP to the CEO of IHOP, right? We've still got all of that in there, but there's a little bit of a narrative, so it kind of makes it a little bit easier. Each piece is now connected to the next piece, right? And then, of course, we could finally put it in a couple of doctors.
Met with an executive for pancakes.
Yeah, a couple of doctors met with an executive for pancakes. And that is so fluid and easy compared to everything else. And so that is kind of the goal of exposition. We have this string of facts and backstory and information, mm-hmm. and we need to bring it down to that smooth easiness of a couple doctors met with an executive for pancakes. Right?
Yeah, that's awesome.
One of the mistakes here then is, of course, the info dump. If we're putting too much in or we try to condense it too much, what happens is we're filling up those memory slots, right, too quickly. So, because sometimes that's a tendency that authors have, be like, I have this, I need to get it in there, I'm going to condense it and just make it really short and quick. And then, but what you end up then is just a string of letters. It's so condensed that you fill up all their memory slots before they even get through all the information.
Yeah.
And they can't retain all of it. So it needs to be molded into that narrative fashion to make it just that smooth, easy go down, right? Mm-hmm. So we talked about the cliffhanger and the middle action info dump when you're talking about your example, right? So like I said, So we have these 4 to 5 memory slots. Well, the pieces of the cliffhanger are going to be taking up, you know, you've how many characters are in the cliffhanger and then the event itself. So if you've got 3 characters in the event, that's 4 or 5 slots. You've filled up. And now it's going to be a lot harder for them to consume all the new information of the exposition because they're in the middle of the action or they're just after cliffhanger. So what you want to do is actually clear those memory slots when you've got a lot of exposition. So there's 2 places where you have this. In the beginning of the story, you've got a slot for exposition because you haven't filled up the memory slots. They're not tracking everything that's going on in the story yet. And then the other is if you have resolution to like some subplot or something, then that's going to clear out those memory slots. And that next chapter, you can go a little heavier on the exposition because the mind is clear. It's easier for them to consume. So the really interesting thing is this is what The Expanse does. Chapter 1, the very opening 2 pages are basically exposition. Mm-hmm. You get some history and you get some technology about how they expanded to the universe. And so, I mean, there's a little bit of gamble there, not opening with a hook, but they did recognize we can get away with more exposition right now because there's nothing else in the reader's head. Yeah. And so it's easier to pick up and follow when those memory slots are clear than it is when you've got all that story going on in there.
Yeah.
So now, of course, that's only one technique, right? Part of it is making that smooth go down. Right? So what we're looking at right now is, you know, we're still RSVPing to IHOP, but we're saying this is all you need to know what's going on right now. So it's going to be easy to remember to RSVP to IHOP. But the other techniques we're going to look at is converting it to that sentence, right? A couple doctors met for pancakes. Articles I cite is written by Bonnie Johnston. She's a writing coach. And she talks about John Updike's A and P. So you get all that exposition right there? Pretty heavy, right? There at the beginning. So A and P is a really short story by John Updike. Just about a kid working in a grocery store. And in it, there is a lot of exposition, right? It's done in interiority as the kid's just thinking and watching everything. But every time it's delivered, he's not just giving you information about the town. Every single time he talks about it, it's heavily covered in his own perspective of the people who make up the town itself, and just how he feels about it. And so when you read it, unless you're told it's exposition, most people don't even recognize that's what's going on. Like, you have to be really paying attention because what it reads like is really just heavy characterization. Right. This is a kid telling you stories about his town covered in his own sarcasm and disdain. Right. And so that's how it feels, is you're just getting these little stories. But what it actually is just backstory. It's the backstory of the town and the people that live there. And that's exposition. And that's like 80% of the whole short story. It's just his little rambles about it.
So you're saying that works because it's showing us character. It's going deep character.
It's deep character.
Which is fun, which is interesting, entertaining.
Yeah. So it's deep character, and they're little short stories. Each, you know, it's not like this is, you know, it's not like a history book. It's a little story about some person that he does not like in this town. But it's something they did a year ago, 5 years ago, you know. And so, it's a very strong characterization in each of these. And again, they don't read like a history lesson. They read like a little story.
Man, it's funny because you just say he talks about people he doesn't like, and that little that qualifier intrigues me, and I'm just like, oh, I want to read that.
Yeah,
backstory.
I want to read that next story. Yeah, so he talks.
Oh, it's good.
He talks really about the people that he doesn't like.
Yeah.
We'll put a link to that John Updike. So you have to get it in a compilation, but we'll put a link on the site as well if you want to check out A and P or any of his other little short stories.
Cool.
But yeah, so that's how exposition is covered up there, right? So what the type of exposition being looked at is backstory and history of the town. Those are the 2 components. And both of them are converted into both a short story about the person and coded with his emotion in the fact that he doesn't like them and the comments he makes about them in that little short story. And all of this is like one paragraph per event or person in his head as he's working at the cash register. Right. So we talked about narrative drive, and Robert McKee, who wrote Story, he recommends that you turn exposition into ammunition. Now, with each of these techniques, each type of exposition is not going to fit with every technique, right? You cannot take everything and use characterization and short stories. It's not going to work with every piece of exposition you're going to use. And the same thing with this. So know that certain types of exposition will fit into different types of tools to disguise it, so to speak. So McKee's recommendation is you turn it into ammunition. And what he means is you take facts about the world, history, backstory, and the characters use them to further their current goals. All right, so let's give an example here. So in the example, Jack says, "Harry, how long have we known each other? What, about 20 years? Ever since we were at college together. That's a long time, isn't it, Harry? Well, how the hell are you this morning?" Right? that's direct exposition. It's told in dialogue, but it's uncoded, right? He's just told you, "We've been friends since college, and it's been about 20 years, right? So, you know, as much as one of the techniques of exposition is moving it to dialogue, this is not moving it to dialogue in a way that works. This is not hiding it at all, right? This is what we call an as you know Bob moment. And we'll cover that in more detail later. So McKee says if we rewrite this, if we turn exposition into ammunition, we can kind of further this. And so Jack, reaching to Harry's stifled yawn and bloodshot eyes, says, "Harry, look at you. The same hippie haircut, still stoned at noon, the same juvenile stunts that got you kicked out of school 20 years ago. Are you ever going to wake up and smell the coffee?" And so there's conflict here, but I, after reading this, was like, let's take it one step further, right?
Oh, you took McKee's.
Yeah, so I took McKee and said, let's take it one step further and really turn this into ammunition and make it really clear. The character is not just saying this to say this. He's saying this because he wants something, right? So we see Jack, and he's walking through this huge, pristine, very clean and orderly house. And he walks out into his backyard towards the pool house. And there's junk and cigarette butts cluttered around the pool house. He knocks on the door, or more, pounds on the door. And Harry answers, and he gives him that line. "Harry, look at you. The same hippie haircut, still stoned at noon," right? He gives him this whole line. And now when you hear this line of dialogue, he's not just drumming up conflict. He wants Harry to change because he's sick of him being a slob and living in his pool house, right? So now these lines of exposition, it's ammunition. Jack wants something, and he says this to help him get it. And at the same time, it's exposition and backstory.
Yeah.
But it no longer feels that way. It feels part of relevant current conflict, right?
Yeah. I mean, that is the story. They're reluctant roommates. That's the story.
Probably the most famous story where we've used exposition as ammunition is Star Wars, right? Darth Vader reaches a point where it's either he's going to kill Luke or Luke's going to kill him. And so he pulls out his piece of ammunition. "Luke, I'm your father." Right? "We can end this differently. I can get what I want. I can bring you to the dark side." Right? It's one of the most famous lines in movies, and it's exposition. That's backstory. Darth Vader's Luke Skywalker's father is backstory, but it's used as ammunition to further Vader's goals in the moment.
Man, I've never thought of that line as backstory, but you're right.
What it is, right? It's the history of the characters.
Yeah, it's good.
But it was converted into ammunition so that it was relevant, used to achieve the goal of the character in the moment. Part of what makes it so good is that it's held on for so long, right? They wait till the end of the second episode to give us this piece of information. But imagine, like, this is a piece of exposition that Obi-Wan could have told him when he first met him. R2-D2 or CP3 could have had it in their databanks. Be like, "Yes, Anakin Skywalker's, you know, has a son named Luke Skywalker." You know? But that's not how it's introduced ever. It's held as a piece of ammunition to help a character achieve a goal. So we'll cover a couple examples here from The Expanse, but we probably won't get through all of them. And then we'll dig into more of these and more examples next time, just because we're running a little short on time here. Like I mentioned, in the very beginning of The Expanse, there is a prologue that's a little action-packed to kind of launch the narrative drive of the story. But chapter one, this is how it opens. 150 years before, when the patriarchal disagreements between Earth and Mars had been on the verge of war, the belt had been a far horizon of tremendous mineral wealth beyond viable economic reach, and the outer planets had been beyond even the most unrealistic corporate dream. Then Solomon Epstein had built his little modified fusion drive, popped it on the back of his three-man yacht, and turned it on. With a good scope, you could still see his ship going at a marginal percentage of the speed of light, headed out into the big empty. The best, longest funeral in the history of mankind. Fortunately, he'd left plans on his home computer. The Epstein drive hadn't given humanity the stars, but it had delivered the planets. Mm. And that's how it opens. It's the history of this conflict between Earth and Mars, and the introduction of a piece of technology that allowed humans to travel inside the solar system.
So there's more... There's a deeper story to that, Epstein. When did they tell it?
I don't know. I've read the whole series. I couldn't tell you when you get all the pieces. But that's paragraph one, chapter one, the expanse, right? Mm. They, you know, I think it was probably a really hard decision between the two writers and their editor to say, let's start with the exposition.
I guess I want to push back a little. Why do you need this? I feel like you don't need to know this.
I think what it does is when you pick up a sci-fi, there's a big scope of what that can be, right? And I think this establishes very clearly what it is up front. We have a political disagreement between two factions. And then this drive was introduced and it spread humanity throughout the galaxy, throughout the solar system. Yeah. And so it's very clearly where we are in the sci-fi development of humanity, and that there are political factions at play.
Yeah. So it limits the scope to the solar system, which is actually, I think, a super cool part of the expanse. I love that it starts with that little set.
Yeah. Because like I said, with sci-fi, you don't quite know what you're going to get. Are we, you know, traveling the stars? Are we, you know, what's the state of humanity? And essentially, he makes it very clear here. There's Earth and there's Mars. And then we got the drive and we could go to the outer planets.
The belts.
Yeah, the belt. He says, and that's what we're dealing with. Yeah. Right? And so that's what it establishes very clearly up front. What are the factions? And what is the scope of the science fiction you're reading? Hmm. They leveraged the empty mind of the reader to kind of jam that all in real quick. Hmm.
Well, yeah, I don't know if we should discuss this now. So you specifically mentioned we're not doing movies because there's no exposition in those. Generally,
I mean,
you can have a narrator.
But it's handled very differently, and we really want to look at text. Because, I mean, you can have an As You Know Bob in a movie. Happens all the time. I mean, the term came from screenwriters who were telling each other, stop doing that. Mm. You know?
Yeah.
But if you pull up like TV shows from the late 40s, early 50s, you'll see a lot of As You Know Bobs. Mm. Because they were learning the medium, and there's some differences in the techniques. Like, a lot of exposition is handled through interiority, where TV and movies don't have interiority at all. It's not a technique they have.
Yeah. I recently watched the Blade Runner films, and the original theatrical release had, what's the character's name? I can't remember. Harrison Ford. He narrates.
Oh, Blade Runner. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Man, what's his name? I can't think of
the
character.
Ryan Gosling?
No. Sorry. The Harrison Ford's character.
Oh, I don't remember.
It's on the tip of my tongue. Anyway, so in the theatrical release, the studio forced Ridley Scott to have Harrison Ford narrate throughout the film, kind of like an old mystery film. And he'll say, you know, but I was struggling and I couldn't decide whether to trust her. It gives you interiority. And Ridley Scott took that back out in the director's cut.
Oh.
And now you just watch it. There's no exposition. And I think you can argue that it's much more artful.
Yeah.
But it's also... There are some things I didn't get until I went and looked at, oh, this is what they told you about.
Yeah.
Anyway, so it's tricky. But I like to think, let's do the artful side. Like, let's make it work. Let's not do this dopey narration. I mean, I guess that's the whole point of this. We're not going to do dopey narrations. Yeah, we're going to do clever, ammunition-based
exposition. So, like, I think your point is, if you take the exposition out, pieces are lost. We don't want you to lose the pieces. The point of this episode is not to say, don't do exposition. Everybody's going to tell you that. We want to say, do it right.
Yeah.
Because it adds to the story, right? I guess with my novel, it was such a profound experience to have so much feedback about that character, you know? And I mean, I knew going in, I was like, okay, I'm going to dig into his backstory and just kind of see what happens, right? Because I felt it would, because in the earlier novels, this had always been his backstory. And everyone's saying people were saying, that sounds really cool. It's not coming through. So when I wrote this one, I was like, okay, let's make sure that it comes through. And like I said, every reader has loved that. It's so complex. You understand that he thinks he's the good guy, but still does things he doesn't like doing. And so it was like, well, if you do it right, it really works. And it really can bring a lot of life to the novel and just make it work in a whole new way. So that's why we're doing exposition is to make sure it is, you know, getting it to work. You got the name?
Yeah. Deckard.
Deckard. Yeah. There you go.
Anyway, man, yeah, I really enjoyed those. I watched Blade Runner 2049 when it came out.
Oh, I thought that was so dull.
But I hadn't seen the previous one in years, so I just rewatched them both back to back, and it was a quite different experience.
What do you think of the new one? I was really disappointed. It just
Having just watched the first one a couple days before, I actually really liked it.
Oh, really?
I didn't love it the first time I watched it.
Oh, man. Maybe I should have watched them back to back, but I...
Yeah. Well, and the truth is, the other one is really slow and plodding, and it's almost a... I mean, you have stories that focus on plot. You have ones that focus on character. I really feel like this is a story that focuses on world. Like, it's about the setting and just, like, feeling this dark, dreary, rainy... Anyway, and the settings really are fantastic.
The setting's really done well. At least in the first one. I didn't feel like the second one, the setting was really well done. You know, I felt like... And part of this might be that I saw it on a 4K TV, and that just ruins all TV and movies.
Right? Oh, why?
Whatever technology they have for recording it just doesn't convert well. And so it ends up looking like you're watching like a setting from like the 1960s.
Huh.
Like it looks like it's just a set that's just like the clothing looks like costumes and the set looks like props.
Hmm.
You know?
Yeah, that's bad.
Yeah. Like it does look really bad. Huh. I guess they were designed for gaming because games are all graphics and they look fantastic on the 4K TV because they can, you know, display the full degree of the graphics. But watching movies and TV, like, it's just not meant for it.
So. Well, sorry. I just took us on a huge tangent.
So, all right. Well, we'll end the episode here and we'll pick up next time with more examples from The Expanse. And go into a few other techniques. We'll talk about exposition and dialogue, flashbacks, backstory, and the ignorance tool, and all of that. We'll get into in the next episode, hopefully.
In another exciting episode of Start Writing.
So, all right. Well, thanks for listening, and it's time to start writing.